Hey, it's Flaves, and this is Climate Changers, a podcast where we celebrate the heroes who are on the front lines of creating a new and sustainable resource and energy economy. Today, my guest is Rick Knight, a research coordinator and educator at the Citizens Climate Lobby.
Hi, Rick. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Ryan.
For those in my audience who are not familiar with the Citizens Climate Lobby, could you talk about your mission and what makes CCL unique?
Sure. Citizens Climate Lobby is an advocacy organization, a nonprofit, nonpartisan, with a focus on climate change. We're not like other environmental organizations that try to cover every environmental topic. We focus mainly on developing the political will to stop climate change in the United States and around the world as well.
And you have a unique bipartisan mission as well.
We believe strongly that the only way to get really durable policy in the United States is for it to be bipartisan. You know, we've seen over the years, over the decades, that big initiatives that really need the support of the American people can only survive the political changes in our system if we have the support of both major political parties. So that's really our reason for supporting bipartisan agreements.
Can you talk a little bit about the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act and how it will work and how it will impact American households?
Yeah, back in 2007, when CCL was founded, we didn't back any specific policy, but there were two benchmarks that had to be met. Legislation had to be effective, and it had to protect the poor from being unduly burdened. But it quickly became apparent that CCL had to get behind something specific. Around 2011, they settled on an idea that was favored by scientists and economists, a plan called the Carbon Fee and Dividend, which looked like it would meet those benchmarks. And so CCL adopted that as a core policy and put our citizen lobbyists to work promoting it. And eventually we did get action in Congress, starting with a Florida congressman named Ted Deutsch. In 2018, Deutsch and four other House members first introduced a bill called the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. So CCL put all our weight behind that bill, and by mid-2020, the sponsor list had grown to 86 House members from all over the country. Now, here's how the plan works. It will place a fee on fossil fuels right after they're extracted from the ground based on the amount of carbon they contain. Then every month, all of that money is divvied up to American households on an equal basis. That's the carbon dividend. Every adult gets the same amount, every child gets half of that amount, sent directly to the household, and that carbon fee increases every year by a fixed amount until emissions drop to net zero. So why does this work? It's a basic law of economics that if the price of a product goes up, people will use less of it. Not just consumers, but utilities, manufacturers, other businesses. Meanwhile, products with smaller carbon footprints, like those made with renewable energy, will outcompete fossil fuels because they pay little or no carbon fee. And this simple, transparent mechanism drives climate-killing emissions out of the economy in every sector, from top to bottom, prompting investors to put their money into clean energy. That's how it's effective. Now, as for that second benchmark, protecting the poor, CCL commissioned a study to find out about this. The result was that virtually all of households in the bottom 20% of income actually come out ahead. In fact, two-thirds of households will get more back in dividends than they pay in increased energy costs. And higher-income households will generally end up paying a little more than they get back, simply because of their bigger carbon footprints, but it will amount to a pretty small part of their income, less than 0.5%. Now, before I get off this question, two more things. To ensure that American businesses don't just move their operations to other countries that don't have a carbon price, there's what is called a border adjustment, where imported fossil fuels and energy-intensive products have to pay a carbon fee at the border to level the playing field. And finally, there are two safeguards in the bill, just in case the carbon fee doesn't work as well as the models indicate. Every year, there is a target for emissions cuts that have to be met, and if it's not, the carbon fee will increase at a faster rate. After 10 years, if those annual targets are still not being met, the EPA will be obligated to figure out where the problem areas are and then develop and issue regulations to fix them. So that's in a nutshell how the policy works.
Some critics, however, say that the situation is so urgent that carbon pricing takes too long and that we should just impose regulations to stop carbon emissions. How do you answer that criticism?
We've heard that, and it's a fallacy that government can just decree a regulation and you're done. It's actually a long, uncertain process to put regulations in place. And there are technical reasons for that. Regulations have to be authorized by legislation, and I'll get back to that. But what happens is that an agency will write a proposed rule and issue a notice of regulation. Then you go to a public comment period where the agency has to accept comments from the public, review them, and then draft and issue a final rule. Now, the complication is that the authorizing law for climate happens to be the Clean Air Act, which was updated back in the 90s and then was finally affirmed by the Supreme Court in 2007, I believe it was, to be applicable to greenhouse gases, which cause climate change. And the problem is that the Clean Air Act requires something called state implementation plans. All 50 states get 3 years to submit a state implementation plan, and then the EPA can issue a final regulation. So as you can see, it takes quite a while to get these regulations in place. And then the court challenges start to roll in. As an example, the Clean Power Plan under President Obama was first announced in 2013. It was finalized in 2015, immediately got stalled in the courts until it was repealed and replaced in 2019 under the Trump administration. Now, just a few weeks ago, that replacement from 2019 was ruled unconstitutional. So now, if the Biden administration wants to implement the Clean Power Plan again, it would have to start from scratch 8 years, and they have to start over. So this is why we think that legislation like a carbon fee goes into effect right away when the law stipulates. In the case of the Energy Innovation Carbon Dividend Act, that's only 9 months. And since it falls under Congress's taxing authority and the Constitution, it doesn't require any of these state implementation plans. It's about as close as you can get to being immune from judicial repeal. And businesses, knowing that and seeing the aggressively rising carbon costs, will immediately gear up for ways to minimize their carbon costs.
So if a carbon fee and dividend like you're promoting is so great, then why hasn't it been done yet?
The simple answer is because it would work. And what do I mean by that? Well, financial interests, people and companies heavily invested in fossil fuels and their infrastructure, they don't want something that will actually work. They and the politicians that rely on their donations are happy to push for policies that won't really change much, like so-called green initiatives, like getting people to recycle, which is great, but it really doesn't do much to fight climate change. We're buying products that are advertised as, this is better for the earth. So you should buy that, and then you can feel that you fought climate change with a clear conscience. So this is why we need a massive grassroots army to speak directly to the politicians and to the people that support them, and to community leaders and faith leaders, and businesses and the voters, of course.
Can a carbon fee or tax do everything we need, or is it just one more tool in the toolbox?
You know, a carbon fee, it can't do everything. There's no one policy that can do everything. But we don't really look at a carbon fee as a tool. The technologies are really the tools, but a carbon fee is a catalyst for the innovations that are the real tools. Things like electric vehicles, and hydrogen to replace coal in the steel industry, and so on. If the tools are in a toolbox, we look at it as the key that unlocks the toolbox. It mobilizes businesses to put their best and brightest to work and mobilizes investors who have long been interested in green energy but haven't been able to justify the investment because the technology simply couldn't compete with cheap fossil fuels.
There's often criticism that carbon taxes will increase the cost of energy, which some think will hurt the poor and cause the economy to lose jobs. How do you address that challenge?
It's true that a carbon tax gets passed down to consumers, and it's true that if that money just disappeared into the government and then got allocated to some kind of programs, and people didn't know where it was going, it would hurt the poor more, because people at the low end of the income spectrum do spend more of their income on energy than those who are more wealthy. However, that's why the carbon dividend exists, because it turns out that when you analyze the numbers don't lie. People at the high end of the income spectrum have about 2.5 times the carbon footprint of people who are less wealthy. And so it turns out that when you send the money back to households on an equal per capita basis, people in the lower 60% at least of the income spectrum actually make more money or get more money in those monthly dividends than their costs increase in terms of higher energy costs. And we've proven this by commissioning a modeling project that showed exactly how it turned out. For example, people in the lowest 20% of the income spectrum, about 96% of them will actually come out ahead. And even people in the middle income, the middle 20%, will just about break even. So we feel that this will really develop strong public support. It will be fair and equitable. It will actually help reduce the equity issues that we currently have in our society.
Why does CCL focus all of its energy on Congress when our parties are so divided and it's so hard to get any kind of legislation passed?
This has always been an issue of how do you get things through Congress? And that's why we see, for example, the current administration focusing right now on executive action, because it can be taken quickly. But it does run into those problems of the delays in getting regulations in place. Well, our philosophy is really to identify what's the best solution and then fight for that, rather than to follow the path of least resistance. And climate change is a persistent problem, so it needs a durable solution. And as I said earlier, we don't want it to be a political football. No matter how hard it may be, it has to be bipartisan. When John F. Kennedy made the statement talking about the space program, he said, we do this not because it's easy, but because it's hard. And the things that are really worth doing are hard. But that's why we focus on what we feel is the best solution.
You mentioned earlier that the new administration has made it clear that climate is a priority. What makes you most optimistic about what we can accomplish with this new federal commitment?
I am optimistic. There finally seems to be an appetite in Washington to move on climate change. And the work we've done over the past 10 years has helped move public opinion. We're thrilled to see the Biden team's commitment and new officials in the administration like John Kerry and Janet Yellen. They seem to understand that putting an honest price on carbon must be part of the program. But we still maintain that the real action has to be in Congress, and there'll be plenty of paid lobbyists knocking on their doors. That's why we need lots of citizen lobbyists knocking on those same doors, telling those lawmakers, respectfully in the way that we do, that they need to consider the needs of all Americans and all people who are affected by climate change.
What can my audience do to help ensure that legislation like the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act becomes real legislation in the law of the land?
Here's how I'd answer that. I mentioned this thing earlier called political will. We have a saying, politicians don't create political will, they respond to it. People have to create it. And we hope your listeners will want to join that mission, because it will take every last one of us to break through all the noise. So first of all, please go to our website, citizensclimatelobby.org. Take a look at all the information there, and then click on the join button. It's free, costs nothing. All we ask is that you educate yourself on the nature of the problem and on the policy we're recommending, and then join CCL so you can be connected with your local chapter. You won't be expected to go run out and start lobbying on day one. There are lots of things you can do to support that effort, like writing letters to your House and Senate offices, or calling them, or tweeting them, and also writing letters to your local newspaper. Or you can help arrange presentations by CCL veterans in your community, presentations to church groups or businesses or student groups. All of these little things are what add up and move those politicians to do the right thing. Now, once again, the website is Citizens Climate Lobby, all one word, .org.
Rick, thank you for your work as a scientist, educator, and activist to make bipartisan climate solutions a reality in the U.S. And thank you for joining this episode of Climate Changers.
Well, thank you.
Every episode of Climate Changers has a call to action posted in the show notes. Each call to action has been curated to make it easy for you to help create the changes that we discussed today. Thank you for joining Climate Changers. Until next time.